One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because, like, planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement. But we can make life less terrible for those who survive us, and that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Sorry, I have to sneeze.
Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Hank, I'm sorry. Yeah. It sounded like you just sneezed.
I did. I'm sorry. It's never normal.
It shouldn't be normal. It's a concern. What happened?
What happened, happened.
Give me the backstory.
We have to do the intro.
How did this occur? It's a catastrophe.
I don't know. We were just chatting, and then it was time to start the podcast, and something got in there.
Oh, no. Is it out?
I assume so.
I think you need to call Dr. Never Sneeze or Scrooge and find out if you're okay.
Should I start the podcast now?
Sure.
Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John.
Yeah.
It's Valentine's Day this week. I was talking to Oren and I was like, I love you, buddy. And he said, I love you too, Dad. And I said, that's great. I mean, they're an okay band, but I was more wanting to know what you thought about me.
I love you too, Dad. Oh, I love you too, like The Edge.
I love you too.
And what's his face?
You thought of The Edge first.
Yeah.
That's great for The Edge. I'm happy for him.
I feel like the other guy, Bono is his
Bono.
Name. I feel like he gets a lot of the headlines.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that joke need a little bit more U2 references in it to be understandable?
Like I was standing by the Joshua tree.
Or like he said, I love you too, Dad. And I was like, I didn't ask what you thought about Bono. I asked what you thought about me.
That's something closer.
Yeah.
I think that the problem might be in the, you know how people talk about a house having good bones?
Doesn't have good bones.
I think that joke might have had bad bones.
bad bones.
This is something Sarah and I talk about a lot in like real estate and like houses that like some houses just have bad bones and like there's not much you can do about it.
Do you talk about house bones a lot? That's a little bit strange, John. I don't tend to think much about house bones. I really only care about the bones of one house.
I know, but
I think there's a great luxury to be in that situation where I've got one.
Yeah.
And the bones
and
seem fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes the wind blows and the bones talk to me, but look, that's true of my own bones as well.
Sure. Especially these days.
Yeah. Got anything your bones have been saying to you lately?
Oh, just that they feel a little worked to the...
Oh, wow. My bones are like, if you could walk around on snow less, that would be great.
Yeah. I took a big fall yesterday. I was running.
You did?
Along the White River, and I took a really significant
fall. Running falls are never good.
It was one of those falls where I had like five or six steps in that full Wile E. Coyote thing where your legs are just moving as fast as they can move.
That was so funny.
And so there
was such a funny little gait. Where you just can't quite get your feet back under your center of gravity.
Right. But there were probably two or three full seconds where I was like, I can save this.
I'm going to save this.
And then there was like 1 second where I was like, I can't save this, but I have had all of this time to figure out how to fall. So that's good. and I'm going to do a good job of falling as well as I can. And then I got up and I was like, wow, did you do a bad job of falling? It would have been hard to do worse. Like, I got up and my knee was when I fall while I'm running, I always get up and immediately start running again because there's so much adrenaline inside of me that I'm just like, and I was alone. So I was able to sort of like run and like yell at myself and yell at the universe. And I was just like, man, my knee hurts. I really hope that's sweat that's like dripping.
Yes. Your knee just got really sweaty.
My body was sweaty because it was sort of in a panic, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, God, I really hope that's sweat. And I was like, I'm not going to look because it doesn't do any good to look now. I'll look when I get home. And I got home and it took me a while to figure out I didn't need to go to the ER because it took me a while to like get everything cleaned up to where I could be like, oh, that's all right.
Yeah, that's just, yeah. I don't know what's going on there. I literally can't see it. It's under all of the stuff that should be on the inside being on the outside.
Oh, and like, it didn't hurt. Like, I mean, I ran for 2 more miles after I had this fall.
That's wild.
Because I had to. I was 2 miles away from home.
Well, you could have got some other way.
I probably could have
walked.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I could have made a call, I guess. I could have Ubered home. That would have been a little weird for me, though. I was, anyway. And I felt pretty good by the time I got there until I looked at it. It was like the classic kid thing where everything's fine until
crying.
You see it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh no, I'm very badly injured.
Well, so, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm not actually badly injured. I was able to make it to the podcast and everything.
That's great. I'm happy to have you here.
All right, let's answer some questions from our listeners, beginning with this one about sneezes.
Oh.
It's from Sam, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I'm currently pretty congested and I'd like to sneeze, but I know that's weird and that sneezing is not normal and shouldn't be condoned.
I'm glad we fixed the world in this way.
I have a related question. Why can't I sneeze on command? If we could sneeze on command, we wouldn't have to worry about doing it at an inappropriate time and we could get all decongested in private. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, you can definitely, it's true. I mean,
Are you about to say that you can sneeze on command? Because that might be the only thing weirder than a physician saying that sneezing is never normal.
You can't just like sit there and be like, I would like to sneeze now and make yourself sneeze. You can do a number of things that might make you sneeze. I can make myself sneeze just by walking outside on a sunny day, for example.
I mean, kind of, every time. Not reliably.
Reliably. Also, if you like just snort some black pepper, you will sneeze every time. But this was a Taskmaster task, which I loved,
where they had to sneeze.
And everyone failed at it, except for the person who just straight up snorted black pepper.
And they sneezed.
They sneezed. And it did not look like a pleasant situation.
It's interesting, like, not to make this about tuberculosis, but that is my inclination in every conversation these days. It's interesting that in all of the talk about humoral flows and making sure that, you know, the right amount of blood and phlegm and whatnot were coming out of the body or going into the body or whatever, that there wasn't that much focus on sneezing. Like, why did we waste all this energy on bloodletting with leeches when we could have been making people snort black pepper to get some of those sneezes out? Seems like a missed opportunity to me.
I mean, they probably did that. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like if that was a common treatment, Hank, I would know about it. I know about rubbing buzzard fat onto your chest. I know about drinking human milk, which was a common tuberculosis treatment.
Oh, wow. All right. In my research on the thing that I'm working on right now, here's a weird one. So for 99.9% of human history, we knew that if we stopped breathing, we would die immediately.
Yeah.
Like everybody knew that. That was well known. And we had no idea why. And people just didn't think about it. Like you spend your whole life breathing and never stopping. And then you stop when you die.
Yep.
And then it's just sort of like, yep, that's the thing.
So much so that the word respiration contains within it the word spirit or soul.
And the word inspiration means to breathe in. And the word expire means to stop breathing.
That's great. I'm going to use that.
Please don't. Please don't. It's in my tuberculosis thing. there is a little overlap. And so we've got to be. Can I read to you?
Dang it.
Can I read to you a passage from The Infirmities of Genius from 1833?
Okay.
This was in an era when instead of being imagined as being kind of like mentally ill, artists were imagined as being very physically sickly.
Oh, okay. Weird.
It's part of the romanticization of tuberculosis. You know, Charlotte Bronte, even as she was suffering from tuberculosis and both of her sisters had died from it, writing that she was aware that tuberculosis is an attractive malady. It was just a ton of that. But anyway, this thing from The Infirmities of Genius is illustrated is so good. And it's about authors, Hank, and we're both authors, so I thought that you would like this. There's a description of the authorial personality, which features eccentricities of thought and action, waywardness, peevishness, irascibility, misanthropy, murky passions, and 1,000 indescribable idiosyncrasies. And I read that and I was like, shut up. It's none of your business.
What do you know?
What do you know? Infirmities of Genius Illustrated from 1833. Shut your mouth. I don't talk to you like that.
Give me the last three again.
I think the most important ones are their waywardness, their peevishness, their irascibility, misanthropy, murky passions, and 1,000 indescribable idiosyncrasies.
Murky passions is great.
Murky passions is
you don't
so
really
good.
Think of a passion as being potentially murky, but then now that you've said it, I'm like, yeah.
I feel like in the 19th century, one of the biggest fears was a murky passion.
Like, oh boy, I don't want to have a kid with a murky passion.
Right. Yeah, that's a potential catastrophe. For one thing, they're going to definitely get tuberculosis.
I want him to have a fire in his heart and a light in his eyes.
Well, that was the other thing, right? Is that people would be like, well, we all know that farmers have this natural fire within them because that's how, like, they stay warm in the cold weather. And so
this is it, John. This it comes back all the like the, it's always true. Never attribute to anything what could be attributed to class.
Yes. Oh, I mean that is so true. And by the way, there were
what could be to inequality and injustice.
Yeah. Never attribute to race what can be attributed to racism. Never attribute to class what can be attributed to classism.
Yeah.
This was a common problem. And also, like, there were lots of people who were pointing out that it was a problem, right? So there were lots of people, for instance, there were lots of African-American physicians saying, actually, I think, because at the time it was believed by kind of white society that black people couldn't get tuberculosis. And there were lots of African-American doctors.
That would be a thing.
At the time who were like, lots of people are getting tuberculosis. We're pretty positive, pretty sure of it. And, you know, with the farming thing, there were lots of people who were like, yeah, I mean, I know a couple farmers who got consumptive. And I know a lot more like consumptive people who were told by their doctors to go be farmers who like just don't seem to have gotten better.
Yeah.
So it's just so much of it is about who you listen to and making sure that you listen broadly.
Yes. And that's not easy.
It's not easy.
All the time.
We have a natural desire not to listen broadly. So I get it. But it leads to a lot of catastrophes like this one from Elizabeth. Sorry, I don't know how to transition. So I just made one that didn't make any sense. Dear Hank and John, I'm fresh off a young people just don't want to work these days conversation, and I'm really tired and discouraged. How do you recommend addressing these comments in a way that helps people, especially older people, have a little more compassion for the struggles of the younger generation? Paychecks and provisions, Elizabeth.
There's a lot of research that says that data doesn't help in difficult conversations, but I think that this is one that is not yet hot enough for it to have gotten there. And I think that data can help in this situation.
Yeah.
And so there's some pretty easy comparisons you can make between the sort of like minimum wage earned in 1980 and the cost of a house or the average income and the cost of a house. And you sort of say like the cost of a house would be like 5 yearly salaries and now it's 10 or now it's 15 or 20. I don't know what the exact stat is, but to have one of those in your back pocket is always nice. And also that the, another piece of very clear, reliable piece of data that people understand pretty well is that the unemployment rate is as low as it has ever been. So if people don't want to work, why are they all working?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good one. The one that I like to use is just so I can be clear, when was it that young people liked to work? And what the person will say is inevitably when they were young.
Yeah.
Is when people liked to work. And then what I like to say is it's interesting that you should mention the year 1978. Because in the year 1978, the U.S.'s labor force participation rate was lower than it is now. So I guess people didn't like to work that much in 1978 because fewer of them worked.
Yeah, it's. I think that this conversation hasn't gotten so heated and isn't sort of like tied into people's identity as much.
Yeah.
It's very easy to have and when we're older, we're going to think that we worked really hard when we were young and that people aren't working as much in the future. The young people then also won't be working hard or we won't think that they are. It's just, it's going to be a thing. It's always been a thing.
Yeah.
But I think that luckily this is an issue that isn't that tied in. I mean, it may be for some people, but isn't that tied into sort of like the heated topics of the day? There actually is space to just allow the data to tell the story and to say, we've been keeping track of this stuff and like, here's the situation. And so if you're having an experience, that might be that one person. And that's certainly, I think it's pretty harmful to be attributing to an entire group of people something that you noticed one time.
Yeah, or something that you heard about on the news, which I think is actually what it's usually about. I think it's usually about the Great Resignation as a concept, right? Like as an abstract idea.
Which was more of like a thing that happened because we got a good word for it than that actually happened.
Yeah. Or I think there's some legitimacy to the idea that a lot of people
moved around
in the wake of an earth-shattering social order upending pandemic started to think differently about their priorities. That's certainly true. Imagining that as primarily being about the way that people participate in the labor force is another example of a problematic way of thinking about human value.
Yep. This next question comes from Hannah, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, John mentioned Ale 8. The ginger ale from Kentucky in the last episode of Dear Hank and John.
Yeah.
And Hank said that no one had heard of it. As a Kentuckian, I had no idea that people didn't know about Ale 8. It has been a staple of my household for years. But my question is, does every region have delicious secret sodas? Amateur soda connoisseur, Hannah." No!
No, it really doesn't.
Some do.
Ale 8.
There's a couple.
Ale 8 is not just a Kentucky thing. It's also a climbing thing. Like I was at a climbing gym over the weekend with my kid and several people came up to me and were like, "Hey, I love that you mentioned Ale 8 on the podcast." And I was like, "Yeah, I do." Yeah.
That's
so it's
weird.
Also, but that speaks, I think, to this emerging way of understanding regionalism, which is not geographic, but affinity based. So climbers have their own soda and Kentucky has its own soda. And I think that's interesting. But no, most regions do not have their own special soda. There was a special kind of Dr. Pepper in Denton, Texas until like 20 years ago, maybe. And it wasn't that different from regular Dr. Pepper. It was
like
just
a little bit of a different one. What's the one that RC Cola? That's the one that was all around for
a
while.
But RC Cola is not really regional, is it? I mean, maybe.
It was regional,
maybe. Mountain Dew was regional. Mountain Dew was very much regional to the South. And then there's things like, I don't know how to say it. Is it Rabina? the Scottish one.
Yeah.
Remember, like, we did a show in Scotland and, like, people threw Ribena onto the stage?
No, that was Iron Brew.
Oh, that's what it is. What's Ribena? Is that also Scotland?
Ribena.
It was Iron Brew. And was it?
Yeah.
Was it in Scotland?
That was Scotland, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't love the Iron Brew. I feel bad.
No, because it made my taste buds think, I can see this, but it made my body think, no.
Yeah, my body
was
on the move. Feeling some things.
It was like my muscles didn't like it. Like my muscles got crampy. I think it was just too much caffeine for me, maybe.
I don't know that it even has caffeine.
Ribena is a real thing.
That's good.
It's a berry flavored. And it's from the United Kingdom, has British origin.
Iron Brew has quinine, the anti-malaria medication.
It's got a flavor that isn't bad when mixed with sugar.
Sure, yeah, it's sort of tonic-y. Well, there you go. I can't really think of any other regional sodas though, not ones that are particularly good, at least that I've ever had.
IBC yeah, there's all these beer? like microbrew kinds of sodas now. Like you got like the fancy root beers that are just made in your town. But there's something to the like there was the era when sodas were originally created, and then like Coke and Pepsi won, and then they bought up all the other ones, and then they're the two cola companies. But there were a few that sort of held on, and are like just hanging out being eight ale, and that's weird.
Yeah,
whatever.
And IBC root beer, and notably also. Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper is also remained free.
And it's still free. It's the Keurig Dr. Pepper company, which I think is the funniest thing in the world.
That's so good. that's a very weird thing to have happened.
I know. I think what's funniest about it is that Dr. Pepper didn't buy Keurig. Quite the opposite. Keurig bought Dr. Pepper.
They were like,
which is just hilarious.
We want that.
Keurig existed for like 45 days before it bought Dr. Pepper. It's like AOL buying Time Warner.
If Dr. Pepper wanted to get bought, wouldn't one of the soda companies have bought them? That's very weird to me. Maybe Keurig wanted to get purchased by Coca-Cola, and so they were like, we're going to get Dr. Pepper, and then Coca-Cola is going to have to get the whole thing.
Well, so before, just so you know, Hank, before Dr. Pepper was the Keurig Dr. Pepper group, it was, of course, the Dr. Pepper Snapple group.
Did something happen?
No, it was – so Dr. Pepper, before being bought by Keurig, was bought by Snapple.
Snapple.
Remember when Snapple was a big deal?
It was a big deal.
Yeah. And so inside of the Keurig Dr. Pepper Snapple group, we have a huge number of brands from Squirt. You remember Squirt?
Uh-huh.
They still got that. To Mott's applesauce.
What?
To Hawaiian
Punch. That's not even a drink.
To Hawaiian Punch. To RC Cola.
What?
Yep.
They're coming for you, Coca-Cola, and Canada Dry.
Canada Dry. Any minor soda that feels like early 20th century, Big Red, Sunkissed,
A&W, Big Red.
All of these are part of the Dr. Pepper Snapple group.
Schweppes.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo, also very sort of early, been around.
Oh, I love a Yoo-hoo.
IBC.
I love Yoo-hoo.
And the Zions, that Zions stuff, I've never tried that, but I see it at the gas station.
Yep. Yep. So there you go. It really is. It's one of
this, John, we have to make a company that gets bought by Keurig Dr. Pepper. This is our new goal.
Well, hey,
and it's going to be fiber supplement.
No, we already have two companies, right? Like, why don't we just sell one of them to the Keurig Dr. Pepper Snapple group? You guys thought about educational content at all?
Yeah, get into the educational media industry.
Have I told the story on the podcast of my catastrophic interaction with the Dr. Pepper Snapple group? I think
What did you do? I forgot.
I had a meeting with Dr. Pepper. They were very excited to meet with me as a celebrity Dr. Pepper fan. They were like, we can't wait for this meeting and all of your ideas about how we could deepen our relationship. And I was like, mm-hmm. I also can't wait for this meeting. I've never been so nervous in my life. Get on the call. And within like 4 minutes, I've given them 17 ideas. I'm like Hank Green delivering yeah. new ideas. I've got a new idea every 5 seconds, each of them weirder than the last, because I said, listen, I do have some ideas, but they're all weird. And Dr. Pepper was like, we're so excited about all your ideas. And the weirder, the better. And then I told them my ideas, and they were like, whoa.
Those are all way – yeah, you have told me about this. I love this, though. This is exactly what happened with me in Metamucil.
I know.
They were like, no, you don't understand, Hank. Yeah. No one is like you.
Yeah.
Like, your audience, you've got all of them. You've already yeah. got every single person who's that weird.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So, like, so they just want you to, like, voice over the commercials? And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but that's not interesting at all. Like, then I'm just the spokesperson for a sugar water company. Like,
yeah,
that's not funny. You know what's funny?
No, it's not.
You know
that's
what's
not funny?
Is spending $10 million to get AFC Wimbledon promoted. And in every single interview, no matter where, mm-hmm. every single time, every single player has to mention Dr. Pepper. That's hilarious. It's especially funny since Dr. Pepper isn't even a very strong brand in the United Kingdom. That is
they're
bold.
Like, this is not a good idea. And you're like, but it's so funny. Do
First
you agree
off,
at least that it's very funny?
It is a good idea. Like, it is so worth $10 million. Like, Dr. Pepper spends $10 million on, like, a Super Bowl ad. It's so worth $10 million for Dr. Pepper to be in the hilarious position of, like, supporting a football team entirely because every single interview, the players have to say thank you to Dr. Pepper. Like, that is so funny. The supercut that they make on TikTok of every AFC Wimbledon player thanking Dr. Pepper. It's gold. It's gold. It's a $10 million idea, no doubt. And it gets AFC Wimbledon up to the third tier of English football. Everybody wins.
I don't know. They might understand their business better than you do, but I don't know. Maybe not.
I've got another idea real quick. Just want to pitch it to you.
So you actually pitched that idea to them for the AFC Wimbledon thing?
Yeah, that's a hilarious idea.
Okay.
Can I tell you one of the other things that I pitched them? I think I've talked before uh-huh. about how I really thought Dr. Pepper should sponsor humanity's relationship with the moon.
Okay.
But that wasn't my best idea.
Last one.
My best idea was that the spokesperson for Dr. Pepper should be Henry VII of England. And
yeah, I can see this.
And he would
that's
like—
That's more normal.
He would just be like, listen, I live— in the 1500s, I'm the richest, most powerful person in the world. And all I want is what I can't have, mm-hmm. which is Dr. Pepper.
I mean,
I
it's like—
I cannot know the
yeah,
pleasure. I cannot know the joy of yep. an artificial taste, utterly artificial, radically artificial, some would argue, an anti-natural taste, which is the other thing I kept trying to sell them on. Stop trying to act like Dr. Pepper tastes like anything of this world and lean into its radical artificiality.
Yep. Henry this is VII. Just chemicals. That's what people love.
Yeah.
It's going to be Dr. Pepper. Just chemicals.
Chemicals. Just chemicals. Chemicals, by the way, that Henry VII would have started wars to be yeah. able to taste.
Uh-huh.
Chemicals that would have been unimaginable to our forebears. Chemicals that all those people, the 93 billion people, now I'm really getting into it, Hank, the 93 billion people who came before us but are no longer here, who built the world in the hopes that one day their great-grandchildren and great-great-great-grandchildren could live in a world where for 50 cents you can taste something that is not of this planet. That's what Henry VII would say in my Dr. Pepper commercials.
You could write some killer Dr. Pepper ads that I think would maybe alienate a fair amount of the Dr. Pepper audience. But I don't know.
That seemed to be their concern.
I love that, though. I do now. I am sort of like very deeply grateful for my ability to have a LaCroix, you know?
Oh, well, don't tell that to the Dr. Pepper Snapple group or they're going to pick up LaCroix. No worries.
To snap them up.
No, they got to wait till like LaCroix is on the down part of its wave. That's when the Dr. Pepper Snapple Keurig group jumps in.
LaCroix is already owned by the National Beverage Corporation.
Well, I mean, you don't think that the Dr. Pepper Keurig Snapple group could add another name to its name?
Yeah. The only big brands that NBC has are LaCroix, Shasta, and Faygo. But they do have this, John. Their NASDAQ ticker. Their NASDAQ ticker is FIZZ.
Fizz.
That's good. Whoever did that, that's the greatest asset of them.
Yeah. Fizz.
Fizz.
I love that.
They also own a brand called Rip It.
Is that like their Mountain Dew competitor? Their like Monster Energy drink is called Rip It?
Yeah, fully half. It's Rip It Energy Fuel, which is not how it works. Fully half of their brands are red on Wikipedia, like R-E-D. They do not have a link. If you want to write a story about Ritz the soft drink, you can if you want. Nobody has written that article yet.
One of the brands owned by Dr. Pepper is called Deja Blue.
Ooh.
Fancy. All right.
Okay.
We're supposed to answer questions in this podcast, Hank, not pitch our concepts to Dr. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Hank, this question comes from Anonymous, who writes, I heard you're now offering decaf coffee at the Awesome Coffee Club. That's cool, but when are you going to make tea?
Ooh. I don't know.
I don't know.
I love tea so much.
I do too. I love tea. I want to make tea, but you got the loose leaf. You got the pre-bagged. You've got the people who like their chamomile, people who like their black teas.
There's a lot of tea.
There's
three kinds of teas, John.
Okay.
There's green tea.
Pitch it to
there's
me.
Black tea.
Yeah.
And there's like all the weird things that people are up to.
Okay. All right.
Those are the three types of tea.
One green tea, one black tea, and one, and we call it a weird tea that represents what people are up to, which is maybe like a different tea every month that's like a herbal tea.
Maybe. That's actually that's not what I was thinking. I feel like you just had that idea right then, and it was really good. That's actually really good. Because like if you like something with rooibos in it,
yeah,
you don't want to have the same tea every day.
No.
Whereas I like black tea. And I would like to have the same tea every day.
Okay. All right. So
But if you got a bunch of like flowers in your tea, then you don't want the same tea every day. You want a bunch of weird stuff.
You want a tea of the month club. All right.
Yeah.
So then we've got three products, but we don't have three products because we got to go bagged and unbagged, right? We got to go loose and bagged. So we got six products. That's a lot of work. And I don't know if do we have 2,000 customers for each of those six products?
I think there's a different path that we have to start looking at here. I think it's starting up a bunch of clubs. We can't be doing everything as a different club.
Right.
I gotta find a different way if we're gonna keep trying to add things to satisfy people's needs for quality products. With trusted supply chains that have positive impacts on the world and donate all their profit to charity.
Yeah, the size of the idea gets pretty big pretty fast, and that's intimidating to me. And so I'm just going to go straight to the sponsors, which is the Awesome Coffee Club's decaf, the Awesome Coffee Club at awesomecoffeeclub.com. Now we have decaf. It's not really a joke sponsor. It's kind of a real one.
This podcast is also brought to you by all of the people who are going to come for me for the way I pronounced rooibos, which I'm sure is not pronounced like that.
Yeah.
But I've never heard it spoken. I've only seen it on the teas.
I've always thought that it was rhombus.
but thank you to all of those people who are going to come for me for my pronunciation of rooibos.
And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by the Dr. Pepper Keurig National Beverage Corporation Company Limited Liability Corporation.
Fizz.
It's the best deal on the stock market.
And finally, this podcast brought to you by Snorting Black Pepper. Snorting Black Pepper, you are in charge of when you sneeze. Don't let your body tell you up. You own that body. It doesn't own you.
Don't let Big Sneeze tell you where and how to sneeze. Subscribe to the Awesome Black Pepper Snorting Club at awesomeblackpeppersnortingclub.com.
The URL is available.
You can't buy Hank.com, but you can buy Awesome Black Pepper Snorting Club.
God, can we talk about what happened to Hank.com?
That's incredible. I mean, I really feel like I don't like to make myself the hero.
Yeah.
But I killed Hank.com
Myself. You're not the hero. You obviously are not anything but the villain.
The villain, eh? I like that
you
even more.
So I don't know what's going on with Hank.com right now.
All we know is that Hank and I made some good old-fashioned fun of the world's greatest website, Hank.com. And the creator of Hank.com seems to have taken down the website in response, which is devastating. Devastating.
Yeah.
Because it was a great website. And it couldn't have been.
Oh, my God.
It couldn't have been the cost of hosting, because that website is 4 kilobytes big.
Well,
a gajillion
people
could visit that
website
and nothing bad would happen.
Yeah. I feel bad. I hope Hank of Hank.com doesn't hate me now. I hope that we're still on good terms, but I could not afford the price that he wanted to charge me to buy it.
Oh, well, I looked up the price and I also can't afford it. And I can afford a lot of things. I was like, this is a great joke. It's not a six-figure joke, you know, like me buying Hank.com and then banning you from using it is hilarious.
That's a great joke. It can't have a comma.
It can have a comma.
Yeah.
That joke.
Okay.
That's a comma. That's a $4,000 joke. I would pay $4,000 for that joke, knowing that I could probably get that $4,000 back by selling Hank.com to some other Hank.
Yeah. Oh, my God. To have had Hank.com. We also have a Project for Awesome message. This is from Mom and Dad in Baton Rouge to Oliver. What do you call an extraterrestrial kangaroo? A marsupial.
This was the
first joke that you ever wrote, and what comedy gold. We've greatly enjoyed your prolific works of short stories and screenplays over the last several years, and we are very proud of the writer you are becoming. Keep asking questions, actively listening, and finding humor and empathy everywhere. High school's going to be great. Mom and Dad.
Marsupial. That's good.
Marsupial. It is good.
That's the kind of energy I want you to bring every week.
That's my bad. I should consult Oliver.
You should.
Now, we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there shouldn't be any compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on all the latest headlines or their family group chat or their crossword puzzles just because they're available right now, or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
This episode of Dear Hank John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. Let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, that's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off. This question comes from Jem, who asks, Dear Hank and John, in your recent video about the deep sea exhibit at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, you mentioned that creatures don't need to be stored at the same pressure as the deep sea because if they're brought up slowly enough, they're able to adjust. Does that work the opposite way? If I were in a submarine and it ruptured I would be in a lot of trouble. But if I went down real slow, would I be okay and could I survive assuming I have enough oxygen? What a gem.
Great.
That's good.
Jem, no.
Don't
so
do that.
We got a couple of problems, specifically the air that's inside of us. So you got to have air inside of you, which is why in like some science fiction, they breathe in like a liquid breathable thing.
Right.
And that would allow for your lungs to get the oxygen, breathing this liquid thing without air, which is very compressible.
Oh,
so
what's
air
that
can
movie?
Squeeze very tightly. It's The Abyss.
The Abyss.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And that's real. Like, we can make breathable liquids now, and we've tested them for various situations where people's lungs are damaged, actually. More for in-hospital situations where their lungs are damaged and having them be in a liquid could actually be therapeutic. But it turns out it, while people can survive and be fine, it doesn't seem to have much therapeutic value. Yet, I don't know. It's a script that is maybe in the works in SciShow, and so we've been looking at it. But it's cool, but the big problem is that air is compressible, and so anything that would have air in it would get squished. Now, you also do want to go down very slowly when you're going to any depth, because there's nitrogen in your blood. There's oftentimes nitrogen in the air that you're breathing, though sometimes you can have scuba tanks that don't have nitrogen, and that can dissolve, and the higher pressures will dissolve more nitrogen in your blood. And then as you come up, the pressure decreases and that nitrogen will no longer have a force dissolving it in your blood, and it will create bubbles. And then you have the bends where you have air in your blood vessels, which is very bad. But that's a separate problem from you cannot go to a certain depth in the ocean because you have gas inside of you, and that gas will compress to the point where you no longer will be able to breathe.
So let's try to avoid that party, Jem.
Yes. It's neat, though.
We have another question.
Fish that they, and the fish and jellyfish and stuff that they have at the Monterey Bay Into the Deep exhibit are all animals that don't have gas inside of them. Because there are deep sea animals that do have gas inside of them, and you cannot bring them up.
Mm. Interesting. All right, we have another question from Ori, who writes, Dear John and Hank, my 10-year-old daughter Ori is a new nerdfighter and has the following question for you. If people say things are going south when something bad happens, why don't they say things are going north when something good happens? Ori and Rachel. I think we got to get rid of this whole idea that south is down and north is up. As you know, Hank,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to just do away with it. I think we need to start saying going north when things are going south and going south when things are going north. I think we need to...
Well, there is a way in which that makes sense. Actually, are you ready to get your mind blown?
Yes.
The North Pole is a South Pole.
What?
So then a compass needle is the north part of a magnet, is the part that points north.
Uh-huh.
And the north part of a magnet points to, is attracted to, the south pole of another magnet. And the Earth is a giant magnet because it has got lots of stuff flowing around on the inside. So the Earth is a giant magnet.
Uh-huh.
And the north compass needle points to... What does a north compass needle point to?
The South Pole.
A South Pole. But it's
Which
pointing
is
north.
The North Pole. We
the north
call
pole
it the North
is a
Pole,
south
but
pole.
It is a South Pole.
Yeah.
So
it's
we
the
need...
South Pole of the giant Earth magnet. So you're right. But also, everything's subjective and there is no up and down. The solar system does
really
not have a top or bottom.
I feel bad for Ori having to tell them the big news that there is no up or down. Or left and right, except insofar as you're observing it as you are.
Yeah.
And that matters. So your left is left of you, but it's not left.
Well, the weird thing is that we extend this out to the whole rest of the solar system. And so like we've got a top of Earth.
Uh-huh.
And also we've decided that there's a top of Jupiter.
Totally.
And there's a top of the sun.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, that's why that Jupiter storm is always in the same place, even though it's not. Like, I mean, it is always in the same place, but like, it whether it's up or down is in our minds.
Yes, yes, the part of the planet because it is on in the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, I think. Just below. And so I think that we sort of think of it as being like on the bottom half of Jupiter.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is that there is, so the solar system and Earth does have like two sides. There is like, it's a flat thing. So just like a piece of paper, there's a side, there's one side and there's another side. And it seems like you can't have sides without having one be the top side.
Hmm. Ori, we don't know the answer to your question.
Is this a problem with my brain?
That got too deep for me, Ori. I started to feel a little vertigo.
Sorry. You're kind of upside down.
Hank, before we get to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, I just want to say one thing about two things. One about a number of emails that we received. So my first novel, Looking for Alaska, came out almost 20 years ago, and it's recently been targeted for removal from a lot of high school English curricula and also from school libraries. And the most extreme example of this so far is that a parent filed a police report saying that a teacher who'd made this book available had committed a crime, a felony, by distributing obscene material to children. And which would also make me guilty of a felony creating that obscene material for children. And it's a very weird time in my life professionally. It is weird to have this happening with a book that's 20 years old and has been, you know, very generously received over the years. Mm-hmm. It's just a strange situation, but I do appreciate your kind words about it. And the main thing is that I am not the main character of those stories. The teachers and librarians whose careers are affected are the main characters. And so if this is happening in your community and there are ways that you can support those teachers and librarians, that would be the kindest thing that you could do for me.
I just think in addition to being you know, like I can get really hot about this. It seems very extreme to me, but it also seems like ridiculous. It seems
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It seems like people have gotten really disconnected from reality, and not a lot of people, but people who have support and have community around this stuff, and it's like I don't like. The fact that we have to take it seriously is wild, and of course we do, but it also, like, it should be said that it's just very silly. Like, these people, and, like, it comes, like, it's the same with the freaking M&Ms being part of the discourse. It's just ridiculous. People like are not connected to things that actually matter.
No, it's definitely silly, but it does really matter when a teacher is forced out of their classroom for 3 weeks and is subjected to multiple interrogations in a police department related to making books available to kids. So we do have to take it seriously because of that, because it's affecting real people's real professional and personal lives in such intense ways. But it's obviously ludicrous. I mean, I've read Looking for Alaska, not recently, but it's not, just to state the obvious, like it's not pornography. And like nobody who reads it would conclude otherwise, you know, like period.
Yeah.
And so, you know, taking it to that extreme where you're subjecting somebody to potentially, you know, catastrophic consequences for making a book available is, it's ridiculous, but it's also kind of terrifying. There's something about our moment where the ridiculous and the terrifying have intertwined in some ways. Speaking of the ridiculous, several people have written in as well, Hank, to talk about 16 Weeks to Glory, my idea for a streaming show. It wouldn't stream on Netflix. It would stream on Dropout or something. In which you and I train hardcore for 16 weeks, 16 Weeks to Glory, and at the end of it, we box each other. And lots of people have said that they don't like that idea, almost universally.
Yeah, like me, for example.
You don't like that idea. Our spouses don't like that idea. And for that matter, our community doesn't like that idea. The only person who likes that idea is the guy who was Bookless Boxing Reviewer in 2003. But Joshua has written in to say, 16 Weeks to Glory is, of course, a phenomenal idea. You need a goal, a glory that is as funny as boxing, but not as violent and dangerous. The answer is the world's largest obstacle course. And I'm interested.
I also like because partly because an obstacle course, the obstacles can be anything. They could be anything.
It could be.
They can be chess.
Whoa! Did we just think of chess at the same time? How did that happen? I don't even know the rules of chess. I don't even know how the knight moves.
I don't really either.
Why did we talk about chess at the same moment?
And like they could, it could be like you have to, the game of chess has to end.
Yeah.
So you don't have to win. It just has to end.
You have to play both sides and you have to get to a resolution, right?
Like, oh my God, that sounds miserable.
It is very possible, by the way, that I would end up drawing myself. I would like, after 45 minutes, I would be like, well, I guess it's a tie.
The end game. I'm just not strong in the end game.
Somebody had just told me how the king moves. Jesus. It could be a mix of physical obstacles and psychosocial and emotional obstacles. Like maybe.
Oh, emotional obstacles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you have to stand there while your friends compliment you.
Yes. Or.
It's very awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got to say three things sincerely about yourself that you've learned that you love during the 16 weeks.
Oh, that's great. That's how about this one? You have to say an adjective, and we're not telling you which adjective it is.
I love it. I love it.
Just back to the other idea that we had that was bad.
Okay.
Or you have to name a U.S. president. Smaller group. Name a U.S. president, but it's one of them, but we're not going to tell you which one. And you're just like, Millard Fillmore.
No, the great thing about that is that, like, if you know the obstacles in advance, you can train on them, right? So, like, you're training.
Oh, I think some of them should be surprises.
Okay. I love the idea of like training on the fastest chess resolution.
you train on how to say the president's most quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe it's not alphabetical. Maybe it's not chronological. Like maybe what you actually have to do is say the presidents with the shortest names first.
Ooh, I've got an idea for a great obstacle.
Okay.
Something impressive that the other person doesn't know about you. So we have to like create a skill that we didn't have before 16 Weeks to Glory.
Right, where you have to like play the Star Spangled Banner on the flute.
Yeah, you got to be Pia with the violin.
You got to be Pia with the violin. You got to have like a secret snake handling skill that you haven't told anybody about.
That's a separate old joke.
And that one.
The secret snake.
That one, it's not like you got to like race through all of these. Like that one maybe would be crowd.
Yeah,
voted,
yeah. You get
know?
Points.
So like it would be like, well, I actually think that like Hank learning to play the flute was less impressive than John learning how to charm a cobra.
All right. That's great, John. So, I love to fantasize about the things that we definitely can't do anytime soon.
I don't know, man. I feel like if we just kind of collectively agree to clear the decks and prioritize our physical, psychological, and intellectual well-being in 16 Weeks to Glory, I feel like good things could happen.
The world's weirdest. It doesn't have to be the longest obstacle course because there's all those like mud run races.
Oh yeah, I was thinking it's the world's
the weirdest,
the world's longest inflatable obstacle course. Not any mud races.
There should be an inflatable obstacle course portion.
Yeah, exactly. But it shouldn't all be inflatable obstacle course, and it should be some kind of point system where a lot of it's timed, but not all of it.
Right. Yeah. So like there are points where the timer stops and then you like get time to do something.
Right. It's like the Iditarod. Like you've got to, you have to take some rest periods. It's a multi-day obstacle course. It's like a 3-day, 16 hours a day obstacle course.
Great.
This is such a funny idea. And like it would honestly not be a bad Netflix show.
I mean, I agree. I think that is probably the funniest idea we're going to get because, like, it allows for a lot of different funny ideas.
Yeah.
Could we just go to wherever they film Wipeout and have that be part of it?
Just assume that it's, like, still there but sort of in a slightly decayed way, like one of those theme parks.
Part of the obstacle course is you have to break into the Wipeout course.
Obstacle one. Make your way into the Wipeout zone.
Oh, man. We kind of have to pick a lock.
I'm in trouble. If we've got to pick a lock, I retire. It's not going to be me. I'm not going to win.
I've seen that lock picking lawyer guy do it. It looks very easy.
Yeah, it does look easy when he does it. All right, Hank, it's time for the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. The news from AFC Wimbledon is that AFC Wimbledon lost a football game. But I have to say, I watched the game and we looked. We're up against the best team in the league, Leighton Orient.
Mm-hmm.
We looked. Now, they have had 2 losses in their last 5 games, so they're not like on a tear or anything. I thought we looked pretty good. I thought we were a little unlucky to lose. I was very frustrated that we didn't finish a couple chances. And being frustrated about losing to the top team is a reasonably good sign, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important, the headline remains – AFC Wimbledon 15 points clear of relegation with 18 games to go. We probably need like 4 more wins in those 18 games in order to stay up. So I feel pretty good about that. I feel
that
like we can
like
do
it
that.
It should happen.
And so
it'd be hard to lose all of them.
Well, tell that to us last season.
You did lose a lot in a row.
Yeah. We didn't win a game for like 283 days.
Yeah.
So anything's possible, but we're in 12th place with 18 games to go. Looking pretty good.
All right. Well, in Mars news, a Curiosity rover has found a meteorite.
Oh, boy.
Which the team has named Cacao. It's about a foot wide. It's a big meteorite. It's a big chunk, and it's standing out a lot from its surroundings because it is made of metal. It's mainly made of iron and nickel, and so it is like gray, almost shiny, like it's a big lump of metal. Oh. The team released a photo of it, which is really pretty. You can see all of its like grooves and pits, which are called regmaglypts. When the regmaglypts form when cacao was going through Mars's atmosphere and the hot gas melted the rock as it came through the atmosphere. Yes?
You thought Hank's pronunciation of rooibos was bad.
I mean, I don't know. I definitely know how I said rooibos was wrong, but regmaglypts I might have got right. We don't know how long since it's been since that meteorite arrived on Mars. It's one of a few meteorites that the rover has found since landing in 2012, including the 2016 golf ball sized meteorite that was named Eggrock. And it's easier to find meteorites
on
Mars.
I like cacao a lot more than I like Eggrock. I feel like they really stepped up their game between Eggrock and cacao.
They realized that people were paying attention.
Yeah.
So it's easier to find meteorites on the surface of Mars because there's no there's not as much stuff happening. There's not like water flowing around and there's not as much geology. Just like it's easier to find meteorites when you're on Earth. The easiest place to find meteorites is Antarctica because not a lot of waterfalls there. The snow falls very slowly. It's basically a desert. And also, it's very white. So anything that you find there had to get there somehow.
Right.
So if it's there, it's probably a meteorite, which is wild.
Or human trash.
It could also be human trash. Could be both. Could be a meteorite I didn't want anymore. John, thanks for making a podcast with me, as always. We're off to record our Patreon-only podcast, This Week in Stuff, which you can find at patreon.com/DearHinkandJohn, where we're going to talk about, you know, things that made us happy this week, hopefully. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunamedish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown, don't forget to be awesome.